Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.
Shrink Wrap Radio number 178, Intuition and the Voyager Tarot, October 17th, 2008. Welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio, the planet's premier psychology podcast. This is your host, Dr. Dave, coming to you from the San Francisco Bay Area. Shrink Wrap Radio is the show that speaks from the psychologist in me to the psychologist in you, whether you be amateur, student, or professional.
You know, I just use a lot of intuitive techniques. I actually worked with the Oracle, the big, large computer company, several years ago for a whole afternoon with their accounting division, which are probably the least intuitive, if you will, kinds of people. And, you know, I get them doing these processes and just gets them out of the box. And they love it. I mean, it's just, and it just catalyzes, for brainstorming, whether it's the tarot cards or intuition, you know, whatever processes, it gets people imagining and so creative.
That was the voice of my guest, James Wanless, PhD, author and an internationally known workshop leader on intuition, leadership, and personal sustainability, as well as creator of the Voyager Tarot Deck. You can find out more about Dr. Wanless in our show notes at Shrink Wrap Radio. Now, here's the interview. Dr. James Wanless, welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Wow, it's my pleasure to be with you. This should be fun.
Yes, indeed. We've been chatting, actually, just before getting started here, and already we're having a lot of fun, and I'm regretting all this, these wonderful things that you've said that that I haven't captured yet. I had remarked to you that you mentioned that you played football in high school, and I said I had surmised that you were an athlete.
Yeah, and I that's an amazing intuition that you did that, and you must, I guess you gleaned that a little bit from my, how I write, or just my style of presentation.
Yeah, somehow the way you come across in your book has what Sheldon, an old typologist from long ago, talked about: ectomorphs, endomorphs, and mesomorphs. And the mesomorph is the athletic type, the very muscular type. And in your book, you come across with energy and enthusiasm and self-confidence and all of those things that really flow out of that body type, according to Sheldon. And to me, that typology, it's always been a good sort of thumbnail, little bit of truth.
Yeah, you know, working in the intuition world as I do, I guess I call that, which would correlate with the mesomorph, to the kinesthetic intuitive.
Okay.
And a kinesthetic person like myself, a mesomorph, is, I mean, I get it a lot. I get things a lot intuitively when I do. When I walk around or do something with my hands or, you know, are expressive with my voice or something like that, I get inspiration, I get insights. But sometimes if I just sit and reflect and think, I don't know where I go.
Yeah, that's not your path, clearly. Well, tell us a bit about your background, just quickly, where you grew up, went to school, et cetera.
Well, I guess I'm a California boy. I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area. Actually, I used to live in this town called Los Gatos, which is in the foothills above Santa Clara Valley, which is now Silicon Valley.
Sure.
Way back then, it was orchards and beautiful and those white, you know, times in the spring with all the flowers. And now it's all gray. It's all concrete. It's all silicon.
Wow.
But, yeah, I mean, I guess I was in that kind of culture of Stanford and Berkeley and all of that. And then, you know, did my great undergraduate work and then ended up actually at getting my PhD in political science at Columbia University. And that was back in the late 60s when we took over the university, which was 68.
Yes.
And,
you know, are you saying you were a radical?
No, I was there as a student. The radicals did all their mojo without me having to be participant, really.
Okay.
But it was quite an amazing, amazing time. I was pretty straight at that time. And, you know, I went ahead and got my degree. And, well, I'll tell you, though, the minute I got that PhD, powerful head damage, I was out of there.
Yeah.
I mean, I went and I traveled to Africa and this and that, and then got into meditation. Meditation took me to the tarot and spirituality and all of that, and that's kind of been my path ever since.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that part, but before we get there, you became a political science professor. How long did you do that?
I did it long enough to know I didn't want to do it,
okay.
Which was 3 semesters of teaching.
Okay. Only 3 semesters. Boy,
you're
a quick learner.
It was at an American university in Cairo and then in Beirut. So, but they were American-style education systems. So I got into the system and I said, you know, I just don't fit.
Yeah, yeah.
Into the system.
And you confessed to me before we officially started this call that you only ever took 1 course in psychology.
That is correct. Just enough to be dangerous.
Right. So how does a nice political science professor evolve into a titan of the human potential movement?
Thank you. Titan, I love that.
You like that, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I love, like we were talking about types, like the mesomorph type and all that. I just love the idea of archetypes, personality archetypes, and the kind of the Carl Jung, the Jungian sense of psychology. But that was not the psychology, you know, I took as an undergraduate.
So how did you first get exposed to meditation? Because you said that was kind of the doorway in for you. I noticed right now you're living really close to Esalen, so I'm wondering if the Esalen Institute had anything to do with that.
You know, not really, but it was funny. I mean, here we are. I mean, you have a PhD, I have a PhD, and I kind of got this, and I said, like, so? I mean, is this it? Does this mean I'm supposed to know something or be at the top of a field of a certain way of using the brain? And is that it? Isn't there something more than this? And it's that wonder and that question that took me into basically transcendental meditation, the old TM stuff.
Okay.
That started out in the early 70s, and I just, you know, took a class and just really, really enjoyed it. If nothing else, I just enjoyed it, meditation process.
Yeah, well, that's interesting given what you said earlier about being an action-oriented, athletic guy. I would have thought the meditation stuff might have kind of driven you crazy just sitting there.
Well, but we knew we have different sides to our nature, and I must have, at a very deep level, realized I needed, and I still need to slow myself down and sit down and not go ADD off crazy, you know.
Yeah.
And meditation I can do. It's very funny. I mean, I have a hard time just sitting around, like listening to a lecture or whatever, even watching something, without getting up and moving around. But I can sit and do my mantra or do the observation meditation without a problem. It's very strange.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Now, you've written a beautiful little book on intuition called Intuition at Work. It's physically small. It's like about 5 by 7 inches. It's kind of like one of those checkout counter books, but it's filled with lots of wisdom, and it's written in a very personal and straightforward way.
Mm-hmm. So, well, thank you for that.
Yeah, very, very readable.
This, you know, I got to tell you, though, this is one of those books that it's still out. I mean, you can get it through Amazon or wherever, but it never got placed in business sections, where it even says on the back of the book it goes into business. But it always gets placed kind of in a New Age section, but it's a little too much of a corporate look for New Age, so it kind of fell between the aisles.
Interesting,
if you will.
Yeah.
But thank you for saying that. It's one I just loved writing this book, and it was written actually in response to doing a keynote and a workshop for Bayer Chemical, interesting company in Australia, about intuition. Uh-huh. And they needed something. They needed something written. I said, well, okay, I'll write a book.
Wow. So how did you get interested in intuition?
Well, through the tarot. People who probably Google me will find me under Voyager Tarot. And tarot is, you know, basically cards, and it's all about intuition. The card that you pick and how you interpret it, that's an intuitive thing. And so I just said, hey, I'm just going to carry the intuition ball here for a while, because I must tell you, professionally, I love the tarot, and yet it's kind of been the cross I've had to bear. You know, because the word tarot, it sounds like terror, you know, huh. To a lot of people.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of boxed me in and limited me. So one of my ways of breaking out of just that was through the intuition field.
Okay, so that's fascinating. So should we talk, we can drill down some more into your book, or we can drill down into the tarot deck that you did. Which would you prefer?
I am so open. I can go, I'm cultivating my personal diversity.
Right? Well, let's go into the book a bit, and then we'll, okay. And then we'll move, and we'll talk some about the tarot.
Sure.
And maybe even
absolutely
do a little demo using me as a guinea pig.
Oh, good. Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, one of the fascinating things is that you've got one foot firmly planted in this whole world of the intuitive, and mm-hmm. and also in the world of business, and and coming from political science, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So,
right.
And in your book, you say a business approach to life sharpens the use of our intuitive skills.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds like a pretty original statement. What's the role of intuition in business as you see it?
Yeah, well, it certainly can. It all depends upon your function in the business world. But, I mean, the Harvard business studies have shown that the higher a person goes up in a company, meaning you have to be a decision maker, the more intuitive you are, and more intuitive you simply have to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because who knows what's going on in these days of change and uncertainty. So great, I just really believe that great CEOs are, they can be visionaries and all that, but they have to have a sense, a feeling, you know, that intuitive sense. And you know, a lot of us also are in our own businesses now. And so we have to make decisions in our sole proprietorship or whatever, and that's, again, it's an intuitive call. I guess it's the guys working online, you know, putting a widget together and, you know, it's assembly line. That's not particularly intuitive.
Right.
But for all of us who have to make decisions on the fly, particularly in today's world of speed and complexity and choice, how do we know? It's a feeling. We just go with it and see what happens.
Well, I can relate to that. I have a market research business that I do off of a website, and also, you know, these podcasts that I do, and all of that's been pretty intuitively driven. You know, I sort of just do what I want to do and what I think will work, you know, without a lot of consultation. And
absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it is a new world, as you know, and it used to be ready, aim, fire. Now, to me, it's fire, ready, aim, and just see what sticks, because we really don't know.
Yeah,
and we're doing that from, you know, you do it, I do it, all of us do it, probably.
But
we have the trust.
Yeah,
trust.
Isn't it, though, sometimes hard to distinguish between the soft voice of intuition versus fear or wishful thinking?
Because when I say follow the little feeling as your intuition, well, that could be following the feeling of this incredible irrational fear or terror or anger or whatever. And that's not what I'm talking about with intuition. It's like you said, that soft inner feeling that comes out of some kind of objectivity or balance or centeredness or dispassionate sense in a bit. So, you know, we might have this great feeling to do this, do that. And what I counsel in this intuition at workbook is, hey, wait a minute, sit down, breathe, relax, go inside and get centered, if you will, in a way. And really, what does your voice say at that point? And I think that's also what people would call emotional intelligence, here. Because, I mean, a lot of us are just, we're off base when we just react. you know, emotionally about this and that and everything, fly off the handle. And I don't, that's not what I'm talking about with true, deep or high intuition. It takes a little moment of reflection and feeling in and going in and being open.
So I can see, see how that ties into your experience with meditation. So, so it sounds like ideally you want to tap into that sort of a space and then listen to your intuition.
Exactly. And that's why I think a meditation practice of some kind, I think everybody should have some kind of, at least something about it, of being able to sit down, close your eyes, and go within.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have to be a heavy duty, deep samadhi or whatever kind of meditation. It could be pretty simple.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you how we learn to develop our intuition, and maybe that's maybe what you've just said is it. Anything else you'd want to say about that?
Well, you know, a lot of people, I particularly think those of us, what do they call us, the kind of iBrain or, you know, the digital immigrants. Probably digital immigrants are people like you and me, David. We're not young kids, right? And we've learned in classic education, classic reading a book. And so we spent a lot of time writing papers or reading this and reflecting about that. And that's a very quiet mental time. And particularly compared to digital natives, young people today who, when you get online, it's this and that, impulse, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. It's hard to really kind of quiet down and still down. So I think a lot of us in a certain kind of way are prepared for that meditation kind of practice.
That's interesting. Digital immigrants versus digital natives. I hadn't heard that. I like that.
Yeah, that is fascinating stuff. What the iBrain, you know, how our brains are reconfiguring ourselves based on all the internet stuff we do.
Yeah. Now, in your book, you say intuition is tied into our feelings. Can you say a bit about that?
Yeah, well, it is a feeling, and intuition is not, it can come as an idea or as a picture or something like that, but ultimately the decision maker in all of us, whatever we decide to do, there's an impulse to do, yes, no, no, it's an impulse, it's a feeling, if you will, and it's kind of a life feeling. It's kind of an impulse of life energy, almost, if you will. And I don't know what we can call it. I could say an impulse, but then people get rag on impulsive, and you're so impulsive. And I'm not talking about that so much. So I use that word little feeling, I guess, to describe it. But it's so subtle, and we're usually caught up in our minds thinking about whatever, that we don't pay much attention to that little feeling, which really does drive us and make all our decisions and govern our lives.
Yes. I was also struck by the little discussion that you had in there about sort of masculine and feminine and, you know, that notion that intuition, you say intuition is often dismissed as a woman's thing.
Yeah. Oh, well, you know, women, this is probably more of a cultural thing in conditioning. We might agree about that, that, for example, women, in terms of communication with other people, have been proven over and over again to be far more empathic, you know, to feel into where another person is coming from and then kind of follow that feeling in a communication style, whereas men that we are mental, we have a more of an abstract idea, reasoning way, let's say, of communicating, coming from an idea realm, whereas maybe a woman, particularly in communication, might be coming from a feeling realm. But, you know, David, the truth is, all the studies about intuition show that it exists equally in male and female brains, you know. Uh-huh. But I think it's just that women are given perhaps more permission to be a little softer in their saying, well, I feel that this is the way to go. I mean, I've once stood up in a big meeting, and it was a faculty meeting, and they were going through, well, should we do this and should we do that? And at some point, I had such a strong feeling about that, I got up and said, well, I feel that. And then all the professors, my peers, you know, they all looked at me, all these guys, and they said, well, what are your statistics? What's your science sort of behind this? And I said, I don't know. I just have a feeling. That's tough to back up, you know? And,
yes.
But and women would say that a lot more probably than guys.
Yeah, you know, I think I'm in a feeling intuitive type of person, and and I think that made it hard, you know, in the university and faculty meetings and so on, because that's the place that I tend to come from more than from my head and more than from theory and so on. So I really relate to the frustration that you felt with that, and I know many times I've kind of felt a frustration around that as well.
Well, I mean, yeah, right. So I'm not really familiar with all of your work, but so in a way, where do you stand now in the whole field of psychology and the kind of work you do as an intuitive now, really, that you are?
Well, I became very identified with the whole humanistic transpersonal movement and the department that I was in. So it was actually the place that I ended up in terms of the psychology department at Sonoma State University, was probably the best place for somebody like me to be, because it really encouraged, it gave a home to the kind of person that I am. And now this podcasting world really is a way of extending that out into the world, because it allows me to give voice to this very broad Catholic, in the sense of broad, universal view of psychology and human nature, trying to pull all these different threads in. So how did you get involved with business? I gather you do a lot of business consulting these days. You do keynotes, you do workshops. How did all of that come about?
Well, I don't do as much as I'd like to do, because it's kind of hard to get through the door.
Yes.
The front door into a business.
Well, I found that to be true, too.
Yeah. But once we're in, it's spectacular.
Yes.
It really, really is. And you know, I just use a lot of intuitive techniques. I actually worked with the Oracle, the big, large computer company, several years ago for a whole afternoon with their accounting division, which are probably the least intuitive, if you will, kinds of people. And, you know, I get them doing these processes and just gets them out of the box. And they love it. I mean, it's just, and it just catalyzes, for brainstorming, whether it's the tarot cards or intuition, you know, whatever processes, it gets people imagining and so creative. The brainstorming thing is really phenomenal.
Yes.
When people open up for that.
Right, right. And I would think that your energy, your enthusiasm would help to carry that quite a bit.
Yeah, so it is really good for creativity, and it's really good for personal empowerment. I know that empowerment word's used a lot, but it's true. I mean, a lot of people are just simply not validated for a wild idea they might have, which in fact might be the savior idea for a company. You know?
Right, right. So how did you get into the tarot?
The tarot, wow, yeah, you know, I really got heavily into meditation when I was in Nepal, and I came down with, what's the disease where you can't even get out of bed, you turn yellow and all.
Malaria?
Not malaria, but hepatitis.
Hepatitis.
And so here I was in downtown Kathmandu, and I wanted to go climb the mountains, and I couldn't even get out of bed. And all of a sudden, I heard there was a meditation course going on for Westerners at a Tibetan Buddhist monastery. And I said, wow, okay, I can do that, because all I can do is sit around and lie around anyway. And so I did that for a month, never took any medication, did the goal light meditations down to my liver or whatever, and walked out of there a changed person.
Wow.
I never went back to political science. I was kind of bitten by the spiritual path, if you will. But you still have to make a living.
Yes.
Bummer.
So
I came back to the San Francisco Bay Area eventually, and so, well, okay. I didn't really want to particularly be teaching meditation. I'm just too expressive. It's not me. I love it, but it's really not me. And then I had a tarot reading one day with maybe somebody you've heard of, Angelus Arian.
Oh, yes, yes.
Angelus, yeah. And at this faculty of the California Institute of Integral Studies.
Right.
Used to be CIAS, Asian Studies. And she gave me a reading. I said, I love this stuff. I can do it. It's great. It's powerful. And it can be a moneymaker.
Yeah.
You know, basically turn passion into profits, if you will.
Yeah.
And I never looked back.
Interesting.
I just started doing readings and eventually developed my own deck and so on and so forth.
Yeah. So what led you to develop your own deck?
Well, yeah, I just got really bored with old tarot. I must say, I mean, I love the tarot process, but come on, this is the 21st century. Well, this is 1980s that I started, and I said, hey, you know, kings and queens and castles and swords and blood and, you know, rich symbology, medieval, old, antiquated, I'm not interested, honestly. And I said, you know, I'd love to make a deck that was much more universal to the human experience, much more multicultural, much more open to diversity, and not just a bunch of white Europeans, but brown people and black people and yellow people and blue people and green people, if you will. So that was kind of the motivation behind it, yeah.
Yeah, fascinating. I have a friend, maybe later I'll tell you a little bit more, but a friend who's just come up with a deck that also is very much not rooted in the traditional. So that's interesting.
Good.
yeah. So let's, the images on the cards are made up from collages. So how did you come to do that?
Yeah, it is cut and paste. It's not, it's before Photoshop. I mean, this is old world art of, you know, magazines and glue and.
But they look very, very polished.
Yeah, well, they do. Well, I was not the hands-on artist of these. I worked with a very dear and close neighbor friend of mine, back in Marin County, actually. We started in 81. He had been wanting to do an art project. He was an oil painter, impressionist, wanting to do a collage project. And I said to Ken one day, under the influence of caffeine, I think, you know, I said, Ken, let's make the magician. And he said, who? Why? What? How? You know, that kind of thing. He knew nothing of the tarot, a zero knowledge, which is perfect. And we started making these cards, and I would collect the imagery from wherever, take him to him and say, okay, the magician is an archetype who does and has these qualities, and here's the images. And that's how we started. And 4 years later, we had the deck.
So it was kind of a collaborative process. You were
absolutely
giving
absolutely cooperative, yeah. Collaborative, co-creative,
yeah. And,
which is hard to do, but it's the best if you can do it with a partner.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, let's talk a bit about some of the specific differences of your deck compared to other decks. You've preserved the overall structure in terms of 56 minor arcana cards and 22 major arcana cards for a total of 78. You've kept two of the original suits, cups and wands, but you've replaced pentacles and swords with crystals and worlds. What are these changes about?
Wow, David, I'm impressed. You've really done your homework. I thank you. thank you. In traditional classic tarot, there are this suit of cards. Like, there's four suits in playing cards, as in tarot. A suit called swords, and swords represent the mind, and certainly the sword can cut through things to get the great ahas, and swords can also cut and slay and devastate, as the mind can do, we well know. I just thought it was a violent symbol for the mind. I understand its richness and all that. And I said, I'm going to drop the swords. Let's drop the swords. And immediately came to my mind crystals. So in Voyager Tarot, the crystals cards, all represented by crystals, represent our thinking mind. And I just think it's just a better symbol.
Okay.
You
okay.
know, for that. And then pentacles, which are an old kind of go back to pagan times of the circle with the five-pointed star in there is very symbolic of the material, physical life that we lead, you know, and of money and body and stuff and nature, things, physical, earth. And I said, well, that's a good, nice, abstract symbol. Why not let's look at the worldly life represented by real worlds of different planets? And so the Two of Worlds, for example, which is a card called Reflection, has two moon planets in there. The Four of Worlds, which is an Aries sign, has four Mars planets in there. So, and these were interesting. These were all taken by the Voyager spacecraft. Was taking pictures of, you know, our solar system in the 70s and 80s. And I said, well, that's the journey to the external universe. Voyager Tarot is a journey to the inner worlds.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I use a lot of these different kind of symbols, because they're real to our real life experience and 21st century, I believe.
Okay, yeah, this is all fascinating. Now, you've also made interesting changes to the traditional royal cards of King, Queen, mm-hmm. Knight, and Page. Tell mm-hmm. us about those substitutions that you made.
Oh, thank you. I said, off with their heads.
You
know, I have to watch it a little bit here, particularly when I work in Europe with the cards. But the royalty or the court cards, like you say, of kings and queens and all of them, I said that's an interesting political system and archaic. That's not what's happening anymore in the world. They still sort of exist here and there. But I said no more of those. But like you say, I kept the same old structure of the tarot. So I have four cards for each suit. But they're not court cards. They're the human family cards. And these cards, there's one card called the Sage. And the Sages represent the inner grandmother, the inner grandfather in ourselves, the inner elder, the inner crone, the inner wise one that we all have. We've been around the block a few times, probably, you know. So that's our inner wisdom. And then in contrast to that are the child cards representing the inner kid, the inner child in us. And then in between would be the feminine and the masculine images, the yin and the yang. So that's what I've done. It's called a human family and not associated with an archaic political system.
Okay, so instead of king, queen, knight, page, we have sage, child, woman, man.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And basically that's like three inner generations of the grandmother, grandfather, the inner parent, male, female, and the inner child.
Okay, so these are all archetypes within us.
Yeah, and I think you could do some very interesting relationship readings, David, with those cards, because like, who's who in this relationship?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And then you pick the card, well, I guess I'm the child and she's the mother or whatever.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Which does happen.
Well, in the manual that comes with the deck, you right. have some very nice creative ideas for different kinds of spreads, different uh-huh. kinds of uses. Now, all the lower arcana cards have a word associated with them. For example, the Three of Worlds is nurturing. The Three of Cups is love. The Three of Crystals is creativity. The Three of Wands is compassion. Mm-hmm. How did you come to associate these particular qualities with these particular cards? Or doesn't it matter?
Oh, it matters a lot.
Okay.
And I spent a lot of attention to this because the number three card, the major number three card in every tarot deck is the Empress. Or the feminine principle of Mother Nature or the goddess, you know. It's and all the number three cards of the suits that represent the mental and the emotional, the physical, the spiritual, the four suits and those four dimensions of us, those threes of Three of Crystals, Three of Cups, so on, I said, okay, these have to be qualities of the number three archetype, the Empress.
Uh-huh.
And so when I was thinking of what would the Empress, the feminine principle, in a sense, be like mentally, emotionally, physically, and spiritually, I came up with those cards of nurturing and compassionate and loving and creative. And that's where the Voyager Tarot really differs a lot from classic tarot, is I really paid a lot of attention to the kind of creating a holistic, these are big words, archetypal psychology, if you will.
Yeah.
And Voyager's actually been called by one of the real masters of the tarot, has written lots of books, Rachel Pollack. Voyager Tarot is the psychology deck.
From the guy who took one course. One
yes,
lousy
exactly.
course in psychology.
I love it.
Yeah.
I Oh, boy, just enough to be dangerous.
Yes, right.
And outside the box and free to think that way. Because, you know, a lot of times we become the expert in a field, and we have to kind of stay in that field or in that box. And as you know, sometimes it prevents us from really thinking freely and being revolutionary and making changes.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm glad to hear that these, you know, I like the fact that there are words on each card because it makes it accessible to the quotes untutored person. Somebody could come to it raw and begin to have associations and work with it, you know, in terms of what these words might trigger for them. And, you know, on a first glance, one could get the impression, well, these words were all arbitrary. As I looked at it in more detail, I could see that there was some kind of thought process behind it all. And so it's good to hear you kind of spell that out.
Well, and I love what you said about triggers. I mean, the words are triggers. There's no doubt. And that's cards are triggers. Mm-hmm. They're only catalysts or sparks to our own inner knowing, if you will.
Yes.
But the a lot of people say, well, can I read the cards? Should I do this? Am I psychic? And I say, hey, get over it. You know, if these cards have a title on them, if it says compassion, what does that mean to you? And it's a trigger to your own knowing about compassion. But I must say that's the left brain way of looking at the cards. And there's a complete right brain way of doing tarot or Voyager, which is to look at the imagery. And the imagery, as you know, in Voyager is rich. I mean, it's busy.
Yes, you have to look really closely.
Yeah, a lot. And I always have people, because I love to teach how to do this, just pick one image. You know, you pick your card, read the word, get what you get, and then look at the imagery. Pick one out that strikes your eye for no reason, really. And what does that tell you? Now, that is creative intuition, reading picture symbols.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. That is where the most interesting things come from, honestly.
Okay. Well,
yeah, it's a whole brain process. Yeah.
Yeah. I have a deck of your cards here that you kindly sent. Is there any way we could do a little mini reading right now on a question that I might pose?
Hey, let's do it.
Okay.
No problems. You've got the cards. You have them in hand.
Yes.
And do you have a particular... And I think intention is really important in doing a reading. Like, what's your intention? What's the question?
Yeah,
what do you want to know?
Well, I do have a question. I retired from my psychology department. And
you've refired. It's not about retirement. It's refirement, I think.
Oh, great. I like that. I like that.
Yeah.
So they've offered me a course. They've offered me a chance. I've been away now for about 3 years from teaching, and they've offered me the opportunity to come back and teach a class that I taught for many years called Myth, Dream, and Symbol, in which we do things like using the tarot for some of the processes and exercises, and
sure.
We do a lot of dream work and a lot of dream sharing and so on.
Oh, fun stuff.
It is fun stuff, but it's something that I've, you know, did for many, 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 many years. So I'm a little ambivalent about, do I want to go back and tie myself up for 15 weeks or not? I need the money on the one hand, but do I really?
Right. Yeah. If you did need the money, what would you?
Yeah.
I know. That's the question.
That's the question. Yeah, I'm looking for just a little clarity, confirmation, whatever.
Beautiful. Beautiful. So let's ask the question. So what about going back into teaching, doing this one course?
Yes.
Let's make it the what about question. What about doing the course, teaching
right.
it? What about it? Pick a card, a card.
Okay, I'm just randomly reaching down into the deck.
Yeah, it's all random, quote unquote, random.
I have a card, and it is, should I turn it up?
That would be good.
Already turned it up. It is the Star.
Wow.
Is the name of the card.
Well, good for you. Who doesn't want to be a star?
Yeah, well, I could confess to that.
Well, and, you know, when you look at the Star card in Voyager, it's a beautiful sculpture piece. I use a lot of sculpture, kind of archetypal sculptures. This one is Kuan Yin.
Yes.
in Asia, Kuan Yin is equivalent to the Egyptian Isis or Mother Mary in Christianity, and it's the priestess. It's a woman who knows and inspires. Mm-hmm. It's an Aquarian card. I mean, so the card is saying, at least what's telling me, that this is an opportunity for you to, again, inspire other your students.
Uh-huh.
And to be a way shower, a star guide, a star catalyst for people to find their own light and find their way by the kind of teachings that you give to them. So, I mean, that is rich.
Well, that's exactly how I see it. I mean, that's how I see my role.
Uh-huh. Let me ask you this. Would you see yourself teaching it a little differently or, you know, than you did several years ago?
I'm kind of wrestling with that because, you know, it's the easy versus the hard. I've got a bunch of materials. I've got a book list. It's sort of more work, but I have to change some things, I think, mm-hmm. in order to enliven it for myself.
Right, and that's the star. It better be bright and shiny for you. Otherwise, it's the same old, you know, like,
yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Here. So, I mean, I would do it. Not only do you inspire others, but you kind of re-inspire yourself and kind of reimagine this and reenact it and restudy it. I love the re-words. So, in a sense, you grow in consciousness as they grow. And so, in a sense, it's putting yourself back in school. Here, what have I learned? What can I learn by doing this?
That's one of the things I've always liked about this class is it does, you know, I sort of feel like, well, I have to do what I ask other people to do. So I ask them to keep a dream journal. So it makes me more diligent about my dream journal and various other activities and processes that I put them in. It kind of holds my feet to the fire a bit as well.
Oh, see, that you know, there's so many professors, I mean, we probably all know them, who don't do the work anymore.
Yeah.
You know, and don't grow. But that's the real deal. It's we're walking the talk when you do that. That is phenomenal. Well, let's just find out. Let's say, okay, you do that, like we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
What's an outcome for you, the growth, the opportunity that comes to you out of teaching this course? Let's pick another card.
Oh, another okay. Card. Okay.
Yeah. Tarot for me is a Q&A. It's a question and answer process, and cards are information and catalysts.
The next card that I got is the Woman of Worlds, and it says Preserver at the top.
Yeah. Worlds is very down to earth. You know, so it would be very grounding, you know, for you to mm-hmm. be doing this kind of thing. And not throwing away the preserver, therefore not throwing away a lot of valuable wisdom and knowledge that you do have here. It's interesting. It's a pregnant lady there, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So in some way, it kind of rebirths you. It renews you. Something creative coming out of this for you.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I would get. Well, now, what that is,
I like
I'm
that.
Not exactly. But so I would use that class.
Yeah.
I mean, use it for yourself and your own regeneration and recreation.
Yes.
There. That's such a productive card too. It's like, you know, maybe out of this course comes another podcast series or another new book or I don't know, you know, an article or who knows what, but something. It's a producer card. I mean, so, stuff is being created.
Yeah, I had a fantasy of, you know, I like to bring in some outside guests when I can. Who knows, maybe I can talk you into coming up here for lunch or something. I don't have a budget, but I would love to have you as a guest. And I was thinking, well,
a gas budget.
Yeah, that's what's needed is a gas and
right.
budget these days.
But, you know, that's what's great about your podcast, too, is the richness of the diverse people that you interview.
Yeah. So I had a fantasy that, you know, because I was thinking, well, if I teach this class, it takes away from some of the time and energy that I have for creating the podcast. And then I thought, mm-hmm. well, maybe when I have a guest, I could record that and make that a podcast. and kill two birds with one stone, or give birth to two birds with one bird.
I know, we say kill two birds with one stone. I say that, and I say, wait a minute. We just birthed. I think that is a brilliant idea, and honestly, because we're doing this and doing that, we've got to use it all so it covers different media. Mm-hmm. I just think that is, I don't even think that's a fantasy. I think that's a reality.
Uh-huh.
And that's that preserver card. Something, a product is going to come out of this class. You know,
okay.
Product beyond the class.
Okay,
it goes to the world. Oh, yeah. I mean, why would you not do it? I guess it's because of this 15 weeks, right?
Yes, it's the 15 weeks. It's the, you know, I hate to confess this over the air, but maybe people already know this about me, but in some ways I'm phobic about, you know, I've taught for years and years and years and years, and and I'm fully confident and present usually when I'm in the situation, but I'm anxious about it too. And so it felt very good to retire and say, no more anxiety about being good enough, about being prepared enough, about all of that.
But let me ask you, I understand your point completely, but when you do these podcasts, you have to prepare, you go, I mean, there's who knows who's listening to it, it's all over the globe. I mean, is there any anxiety over this?
No.
No?
None at all. Because,
really?
Because I'm not the person on the spot. I'm an interviewer, and so
you can edit.
yeah, I can edit, although I don't do much of that.
Right. So you're the interviewer.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're the quarterback. You basically kind of distribute the ball.
Yeah. Yeah.
But why not do that in these classes? I mean, pull in.
Well, I do that. I do a lot of that. I'll have TAs. I'll find some good people to be assistants, and you know, and I get the students involved in dream groups and try to do a lot of things where I don't have to be the person on center stage all the time, dispensing tons of content and wisdom.
Right. Well, there you go. I mean, you want to pick another card on this kind of issue, though? The kind of claustrophobia, the 15 weeks, all this kind of...
Okay, we've put it out there. I might as well.
Yeah, well, it's all about transparency here.
Okay, right. Okay, here we go.
Exposé.
Yes, here we are, an exposé. Okay, I've drawn a card, the Two of Cups. The key word with it is equilibrium.
Equilibrium. It's a number two card, so it refers to balance of this side and that side. Mm-hmm. So the balancing of poles or opposites, if you will. And it belongs to the number two archetype, the priestess. The priestess, who is, I must say, however, the priestess knows her stuff, but does not like to appear in public. And you look at that Two of Cups, and it's a beautiful duck vase coming down the river of life, in a sense, but it's a cactus, actually, inside the vase. And cactuses are pretty self-sufficient and independent. They don't need to be out there flowering for the world. They're pretty hidden away. They're very hermit-like, if you will. So, okay. I mean, the card is definitely reflecting on your own kind of sense of privacy and not wanting to be out there in person, in public, a lot.
Mm-hmm.
No doubt.
Mm-hmm.
No doubt. But it's a card of equilibrium, meaning, yay, you can do this.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's, I'm very much about balance, the middle path.
Yes.
That's me all the way.
You know, when you mentioned that word claustrophobia, I had to laugh because I was listening to one of your podcasts when you were talking about, you know, how our brains are being reconfigured by the internet and all that kind of stuff.
Yes.
And I ran across this article on all the MRI, the magnetic resonance stuff,
right.
The brain,
right.
Brain scanning, the neuroscience stuff, which I think is totally fascinating.
Yeah.
But this article was about how these brain imaging things are a little bit gross. I mean, they're not exactly accurate.
Right.
I said, okay, let me read that. And one of the reasons they're not totally accurate is 20% of the population will not get in to that MRI tube to do the experiment because of claustrophobia. And I am one of them.
I will
not go in there. And so, and I don't know whether you might or not. I don't know.
But yeah, I've been in there.
You have?
Yeah.
Well, if you can do that, I'm impressed. If you could do that, forget about, I'll do the classroom, you do the tube. I mean, I'm wondering what my brain would look like because I'm not going to get in there. So there's fully 20% of claustrophobes who won't go there.
Yeah. All right.
But that is interesting. If you can go in one of those, boy, you're great for the kind of the meditative world, the inner journey world, and all of that.
Well, that's what you have to do when you go in there is close your eyes, because if you leave them open, you realize, help, I'm in this tight little tube.
Yeah. No, don't get me close to this. Yeah. Let's not talk about it.
Okay.
I was in a lava tube in this, it's called the Goddess Cave in Hawaii, the Big Island. I lead retreats there. I go there all the time. And this incredible journey. It's like the women's journey, you know, down from the ovaries, the fallopian tubes, and all this kind of stuff. And it was a women's ritual. I happened to be along for the ride there. I got so claustrophobic in this place while the labor pains were going on. Women were wailing and whatever. But the thing that saved me was a drop of water that came off the top of the lava tube, the cave. And it just, this cool water fell on my head, and I was immediately into a state of balance and equilibrium.
Oh,
weird.
Right,
weird
right.
Science somehow. But back to you again, I think that the podcast realm for you is terrific because you can do it in your own hermitage.
Yes.
You know, you don't have to show yourself out there to the world, and you can do it in your own time, in your own way, and edit it and all that. It's a perfect medium for the priestess-type person who doesn't want to particularly be out there in public in person.
Yeah. Well, this has been great, and I'm starting to be aware of time, and it's probably time for us to wrap it up. I want to thank you very much for that reading. And as we wrap it up, is there anything else you'd like to leave our audience with? I will put links to your website, by the way.
Yeah. Well, I'm wondering, we don't have to get into this now, but a lot of people do online cards. Like, I have a card a day on my VoyagerTarot.com site, and you can hit the backside of the card and immediately it turns around and that's your card. And there's a random generator going on. The other cards are kind of shuffling through the machine, but what do you say? I mean, there's a difference between actually feeling the cards in your hands, shuffling them and picking one, as opposed to going to the computer and hitting the button that says now and picking a card that comes up.
Yeah, I have to agree with you that I would prefer the hands-on process, although from an objective point of view, you know, there's absolutely no reason why there should be that big a difference.
That's right. But I guess we want to lead with, maybe, or leave with, is everybody has their own style, you know, of being and of doing and of creating. And now there's so many different kinds of media in the world that it's kind of, we're all mediums, but the medium of what media? And it's kind of like, so what's your magic? What is the particular technology or form or medium in which you can excel? And getting to know who you are and then doing that and being that.
Now, that's great. I could tell from your book that I was going to enjoy speaking with you, and indeed I have. So, Dr. Jim Wanless, thanks so much for being my guest.
My pleasure. It's been a blast, and I'll come up to Sonoma State. I'd love to.
I hope you had as much fun listening to this interview as Jim and I did in doing it. Both intuition and tarot are a lot about synchronicity. This interview with Jim actually had an element of synchronicity. I was doing a keyword search for something in my email program. I don't remember what I was searching for. I seem to recall that I may have even made a typo. Up popped an email from a year ago that I had either forgotten or somehow overlooked. It was from a Shrinkwrap Radio listener recommending Dr. James Wanless as a guest. Inasmuch as I had no guests lined up for this week, I took it as a sign and went straight to Jim's website. Looking through it, I felt a sense of rapport already. I fired off an email invitation, and he was quick to respond. We had a few emails back and forth to line up the interview, but never had a spoken conversation until this one that you just heard. I wish he lived closer. Feels like we could be buddies. So thanks to listener Terry Spencer for this recommendation. Here's what she wrote a year ago. James Wanless, Ph.D., the creator of the Voyager Tarot, a San Francisco resident like yourself and former educator, has a marvelous, uplifting, and deeply of-this-world message, far, far beyond the usual milieu of Tarot. I attended a workshop that he led in Atlanta this last weekend, and he's an excellent synthesizer of Jung, Tarot, dynamic energy, a great speaker with fresh ideas, the ability to see the possibilities in what appears to be misfortune with an infectious sense of humor. He also has a podcast, Intuition into Action, available on iTunes. I have the feeling that you'll find it entirely simpatico with your own work. End quote. This was a great recommendation, and you see that I do get around to using suggestions from my listeners sooner or later.
You want to learn about the inside and what makes us tick? You could find all the answers you need real quick. Get on the couch with Dr. Dave. Leave your worries behind. It'll all be fine. It's Shrink Wrap Radio. It's all in your mind. For insight into personal growth and the inner life, hear Shrink Wrap Radio with Dr. Dave.
I've got a new interview up on my other podcast series at wisecounselpodcast.com. It's an interview with one of the grand old men of psychoanalysis, Otto Kernberg, MD, on transference-focused therapy. Dr. Kernberg runs a major center for the treatment and research of personality disorders at Cornell University. The Top Spots widget on our site is a place where you can help support this show and advertise your blog, your website, or some service at the same time, all for a mere $20 PayPal donation. And your ad will be up there for months based on past experience. Right now, all 10 spots are full, but you can have the added thrill of bumping somebody off the bottom of the list who's been up there for a long time. Thanks to all of you who've taken advantage of the discount offers from our four sponsors. You find links on our website to discounts at GoDaddy, Brookstone.com, Budget.com, CarRentals, and PetMeds.com. And using those codes not only saves you money, but also helps to support Shrink Wrap Radio. For example, using the code SHRINK2 at GoDaddy can save you 20% off any order of $50 or more. And some of you might have responsibility for ordering lots of domain names, so a 20% savings could be a substantial savings.
It's Jeff and Carl Jung saying, you're on the couch with Dr. Dave. Your thoughts on the show, Carl?
I think there will be a reaction. A great change of our psychological attitude is imminent. That is certain.
Right on then. Take it away, Dr. Dave.
Okay, let's catch up on some back emails from our listener community. Here's one from Kathy P., who writes, Hello, Dr. Dave. I just wanted to send a quick note to let you know that I love your podcasts. I just recently found them on iTunes. I've always held a fascination for psychology, especially the interpretation of dreams. I regularly keep a dream journal, and I have to say that after listening to the podcast on, quotes, the dream interview method, that's from number 74, I found it very helpful in figuring out my dreams. Some are pretty obvious, but some are so filled with symbolism that they are just nonsensical. But I did have success in determining that the young reporter I tasered to a bloody pulp the other night was actually representing the repression of my desires to get to the meat of some issues with my husband. Oh yeah, my dreams are doozies, but I'm sure you've heard it all. I can only imagine how much time you must spend on these podcasts. So thanks again and keep up the great work. More stable than I sound, Kathy. Kathy, I'm so glad to hear that you track your dreams and that you found some help in our interviews. There are more dream interviews here, and dreams don't sound nonsensical to me at all. I believe that all dreams are very meaningful. Next, we hear from Mark in London, who writes, "Dear Dr. Dave, thank you so much for your podcast. They improve my life. Have you come across a psychotherapist called Stan Tatkin?" And he gives a profile beneath his email. "Several couples I know have seen him and experienced profound insight and changes in their relationship. I thought he might be an interesting interviewee for one of your podcasts. Very best regards, Mark." And then he puts in parentheses, "a trainee counselor, psychotherapist, living in London. When are you coming for a visit?" Hey, I'd love to come for a visit. I love getting invitations. So I've definitely put you in my address book, Mark, and next time I make it to London. And thank you so much for suggesting Stan Tatkin. Indeed, I thought he looked very interesting. And if all goes well, in fact, he'll be my very next guest. And finally, we hear from Viv in Australia, who writes, "Hi, Dr. Dave. I'm writing from South Australia and would most sincerely like to thank you for your ongoing production of these podcasts. I've been listening for some months now and enjoy them immensely. In addition to enjoying their high-quality content, the Shrink Wrap Radio and Wise Counsel podcasts contribute significantly to my professional development. Isolation can be a real issue for people like myself in private counseling practice, and I particularly enjoy the collegial feel that the podcasts impart. Dr. Dave, I'm aware that you're not particularly in favor of personality typologies, such as the Enneagram. This is an area of particular interest to me. Many people see such systems as being too restrictive, simplistic, or placing people in boxes. As my study of the subject continues, I find myself continually impressed by the depth and elegance of a system which provides a useful roadmap of the human psyche. I use it in my counseling practice as it frequently cuts to the chase of people's core issues, and I believe that I am a more effective counselor for having this tool available to me. When using it with clients, I believe that it's imperative to remember that the Enneagram is a map of the territory and not the territory itself. I found a useful aspect of using the Enneagram in therapy is that it shines a light on habitual, unconscious, automatic responses and perceptual filters which limit responsiveness to circumstances and growth. With this information, people can step out of the boxes in which they are already confined, see their circumstances and own parts in them more clearly and accurately, expand their repertoires of response, and live more consciously. My personal experience of using this system for growth is that my insight and understanding of my underlying motivations has expanded markedly. Although there's a worldwide Enneagram community, we in Australia are geographically distant from most of the great teachers, many of whom live in the USA. We've been very fortunate in having had Dr. David Daniels and also Russ Hudson, along with their colleagues, come to teach in Australia during the last couple of years. I wonder if you would consider interviewing some of the Enneagram people during one of your podcasts." And then she gives me links to a couple of the people that she mentioned. And she signs it, "Kind regards, Viv." Well, Viv, I don't doubt that the Enneagram has been a powerful tool for you personally and in your work. And I want to let you and all our listeners know that I have done at least one such interview. It's show number 77, Understanding the Enneagram, with Gabrielle Hilberg, PhD. So you might want to check that one out, and I will consider your recommendations for future podcasts. So I think that better wrap it up for today. You can send your emails to shrink@shrinkwrapradio.com. Remember that in addition to emails, you can also leave comments about individual shows in the comments area on the site. You can leave voicemails on Skype. Our name there is ShrinkPod. Alternatively, you're encouraged to leave voice messages on MyChingo, and you'll find a link to that on our Shrink Wrap Radio website. And in the U.S., you can leave voicemail on our phone at 206-337-0622. And I'm still waiting for more great voice transitions, by the way. Thanks again to Dr. James Wanless for his insights on intuition and the Voyager Tarot. As I mentioned earlier, next week's guest will be Dr. Stan Tatkin, speaking about his unique approach to couples therapy. Until next time, this is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind.